time now for the third and final part of a series presented by renowned preacher and poet Father Paul Murray, who belongs to the Irish province of the Order of Preachers. In the course of his life, Father Paul has addressed many an audience, but in November 2010, his words reached an unusual group of listeners, the members of the House of Lords. To them, he spoke not of politics, but of contemplation, as an essential ingredient in Christian tradition. The talk, organised by the Royal Fine Art Commission Trust in conjunction with Sky Television that filmed the event, marked a first for the House of Lords. A Dominican friar had never been seen there before. In a few moments, then, you can hear the last in our three-part radio adaptation of this talk, one which, quoting Father Paul's words, I chose to call, "What is it like to come close to the presence of God?"
What is it like to come close to the presence of God? One of the most common images used by the saints and the great contemplatives to describe the journey to God is that of an arduous climb up a high mountain, the image of an ascent. But I've been suggesting in these talks that there is another way of thinking about this subject, a different image given to us by the saints. An image not of going up higher and higher in the spirit, but rather an image of going down, an image of a humble descent, an image even of falling. And progress on this path can be thought of as taking place, I suggest, in three stages. First, falling into sin. Second, falling towards grace. And third, falling in love with God. Having already, in the earlier talks, considered the first two stages, the focus of our attention now will be on the third and final stage, falling in love with God. Spiritual progress described so far has been one of healing and purification. God has allowed us to be stripped of the pride we have had in our own righteousness, the purpose being that when in nakedness of spirit and vulnerability, we at last fall back on Him, His touch is felt by us as never before. And by virtue of that touch, we know ourselves to have entered into a new realm of grace, into a new awareness. We are drawn to Him as to a friend, to someone we love. Indeed, writes one of the early fathers of the Church, the soul is led by a heavenly love and desire when once the beauty and glory of the Word of God has been perceived. The soul falls in love with His splendour, and by this receives from Him some dart and wound of love. An unforgettable moment of such wounding occurs in John of the Cross's celebrated poem, The Spiritual Canticle. At a certain stage in the poem, the bride, who represents the soul, is made aware that at last her beloved is present, and at once, quickened to joy by the thought of his arrival and by the strength and beauty of his presence, she exclaims, "My beloved, the mountains, the solitary wooded valleys, the strange islands, the resounding rivers, the whisper of the loving breezes, the tranquil night, at the time of the rising of the dawn, the silent music, the sounding solitude, the supper that refreshes and awakens love. Writing some years earlier in one of his prose commentaries, St. John explains that the acts of love which arise from the heart of the contemplative on these occasions are of such astonishing worth in the eyes of God that even one of them is more valuable than all the deeds that a person may have performed in his or her whole life, no matter how great those deeds may have been. Of course, what is being described here by St. John is contemplative experience at the highest level. That does not mean, however, in the context of our own efforts at prayer, that God does not take delight in even the most humble acts of love. For corresponding to the high mystical woundings or touches that quicken love in the hearts of the great contemplatives, there are other blessings and graces of the divine presence and of the divine touch, which even the least of us, on occasion, are privileged to experience. And not to be forgotten also are those moments of natural mysticism, which can sometimes awaken in both believer and unbeliever a sense of the transcendent. T.S. Eliot calls them moments in and out of time. He writes, "The distraction fit, lost in a shaft of sunlight, the wild time unseen, or the winter lightning, or the waterfall, or music heard so deeply that it is not heard at all, but you are the music while the music lasts." How impressively, in those last few lines, Eliot evokes the power of music. And music, or certain forms of religious music, might well be a really good way to introduce the subject of Christian prayer and contemplation, especially to those who have no knowledge whatever of the Christian faith. For music, in an almost miraculous way, can communicate at times not only aspects of the meaning, but also something of the innermost beauty of Christian prayer. One has only to think, for example, of the great choral music of the Russian Orthodox liturgy, or of the singing of Latin plain chant in monasteries in Europe and across the world, or of the music sung by King's College Choir in Cambridge, or of the music composed for Christian feasts and celebrations by Bach and Thales, Byrd and Palestrina, and by so many others. Hearing music of this kind can, I suggest, have almost the same impact on us as taking time to read some of the great mystical texts in the Christian tradition. Our inner heart is quickened and awakened. We find ourselves being instinctively drawn forward by the beauty of the sound and by the beauty of truth, drawn while the music lasts, to give our full and rapt attention to even the least echo of the eternal word, the least trace of the source of all beauty, the God whom Hopkins calls beauty's self and beauty's giver. This God, a God not only of truth and of goodness, but of beauty, was of course the God who in the end so completely captivated the mind and heart of Augustine. For beauty, in its different forms, was the one thing which had always obsessed him as a man, both before and after his conversion. At one point in the Confessions, in a passage which is justly celebrated, we find Augustine reflecting on that divine love, which not only intervened to save him, but which in the end absolutely overwhelmed him with its beauty. It's a passage that contains what must surely be one of the most moving descriptions of falling in love with God ever written. I am happy now to read it for you and to bring to an end these few reflections on Christian prayer and contemplation. Late, late have I loved you, O beauty, ever ancient and ever new. You were within me, and I was in the world outside myself. I searched for you outside myself, and, disfigured as I was, I fell upon the lovely things of your creation. You were with me, but I was not with you. You called me, you cried aloud to me, you broke my barrier of deafness, you shone upon me, your radiance enveloped me, you put my blindness to flight, you shed your fragrance about me, I drew breath, and now I gasp for your sweet odor. I tasted you, and now I hunger and thirst for you. You touched me, and now I burn for your peace.
You were listening there to renowned preacher and poet Father Paul Murray, who belongs to the Irish province of the Order of Preachers.
I'm Veronica Scaresbrick.